Am I talking loud enough for you now?
Actually, yep. Yeah, right. If you see the waveforms where both of us are.
Okay, which one's me?
That's you.
Where?
Right there.
Right there?
Right there?
Right there?
Right there. Right there. Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 343. This is the Father's Day edition, the Generation Geek episode here at the Caffeination Podcast. I'm joined by my wonderful father, Scott. Say hello.
Hello.
And we are going to be celebrating with you. We're going to be running down the same kind of geek cruft and caffeinated food and bits, and then we have a fun little rundown and tasting that we're going to be doing at the end. An interesting little coffee beverage of choice kind of thing that we're going to be going for. Unfortunately, we've already started the tasting, so we might have to go back and record that early. But so what do you think of it so far, Dad?
So far, we're doing good.
All right. If you remember a couple episodes ago, I talked to you a little bit about the Imperial Espresso Porter from Flying Fish. Went out and got a couple more bottles for today's show because my father and I both enjoy coffee and beer, so it was kind of a nice little mix. Wouldn't you say?
It is quite good. Smooth.
All right. You are, of course, listening to the Caffeination Podcast. We are lovingly nestled along with all of our other episodic friends at www.caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com for those of you who can't spell. If you have any comments, feedback, suggestion, or hate mail, please feel free to send it to caffeination@gmail.com, and we will hopefully respond as quickly as we can. Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. And, yeah, we're going to head right on into the show, right? Pretty soon. We just have a little bit of things. Anything you'd like to say right off the bat?
We're not sending you any beer, though.
Yeah, the beer's staying all here. It's a very good day to record, shall we say. So, wouldn't you say?
Hey.
All right, before we get too much further and too far gone, we're going to talk a little bit about the sponsor for today's show. Today's show is sponsored in part by GoToMeeting. I got to tell you, there's a couple different things that you can and can't do over the phone. One of them that no matter how good you are at describing things, you cannot accurately portray how visual concepts are supposed to seem to other people, especially if you're the different kind of people. If you're in engineering and you're trying to talk to a sales guy and you're across the country, it's better to avoid all ambiguity and just show him what you're talking about on the screen. GoToMeeting allows you to do this. You can hold a meeting online. It's easy. Within seconds, you can get everything up and rolling. The best part about it is within a couple seconds, you head online, you click, and your computer desktop shows up on their monitor. It's really seamless. They have integrated voice over IP. You can talk with conference calls. It's wonderful. I can't stress this enough. I'd like to thank them for continuing to sponsor the show. You can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days, but you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. That's www.gotomeeting.com/techpodcasts for a free 30-day trial. All right, we are going to be heading dead into the rest of the show. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. We have a decent amount of geek cruft. We're going to keep running down the same kind of standard thing that we do for most of the episodes, except we're going to be throwing the rundowning and tasting in at the end. All right. Anything you'd like to say right off the bat, Dad?
Nope. Tasting's going good, though.
All right. We're going to be going through the geek cruft here. We're going to be doing a little bit of back and forth on some of the different stuff that we have. The first thing we have up here is an incredibly bad joke, something my father and I are both very familiar with. This candle is the bomb. Literally, there's a candle that you can actually buy. It's a set. They have dynamite, and they have the traditional black round bomb. Is there a name for that you know of?
No, it's just figured in every cartoon I ever saw as a kid.
Yeah, so Boris Badenov-style bomb here. And it has the lovely wicks and everything. So if you'd like the bomb candle, it's $4.90. If you'd like the dynamite, the three-stick of dynamite, Wile E. Coyote style, then you can go for $10.90 at the Mistake Shop. It would probably be a mistake to send this or try and take it with you on an airplane, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. You might have trouble getting it through the mail, too, these days.
Yeah, so while it seems kind of neat, I think I'm going to have to pass on this one.
I would.
All right, next little thing we have up for you here actually has a special significance to me. I'm actually recording the show today with the first programmer that I ever knew. My dad sat in the basement and started programming BASIC on our Commodore 64 when I was probably around 7.
Yes, that's about right.
We had a black and white TV that the Commodore was hooked up to, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And, so I remember him making the balloon dance around the screen.
Well, by the time I got to the balloon, we had a color monitor. We had a color TV we hooked it to.
That's right, because it was red and yellow, wasn't it?
Yes.
All right, well, some fine folks over at Hackaday.com have managed to take the Commodore 64, layer a whole new operating system on top of the existing hardware called Breadbox 64 that filled in a couple of the noticeable gaps in the Commodore operating system. It's horrible to me that somebody who wrote an operating system back in 1985 for the Commodore 64 would not include net access or a way to network between machines. I just can't understand it, so... But in bridging that, they allowed for a whole host of other new applications to come out, specifically the Commodore 64 Twitter client. And it allows you to show your entire stream up on your Commodore 64. It updates approximately every 2 minutes. And what did you say when I first showed you this, Ed?
Yeah, right. Why bother?
Exactly. I'm not really sure. Unless you have like one of those tiny little TVs, maybe an 8-inch from the 1950s laying around.
I have one.
I know. I actually talked about it a little in the last episode because unfortunately now you can't get any channels on it.
I could if I bought a box.
Really? It could still hook up to it?
Probably.
I don't know. Does it have the coax in?
No.
Okay.
But you can get an adapter for that.
But does it have the place where you can plug in the...
external antenna, yeah.
Oh, okay. So, yeah.
So it could be hooked up.
So we could probably run the Commodore 64 Twitter client on the 8-inch TV from the 50s that's in my parents' house.
The Admiral Television, yes.
There you go. All right, moving right along. Next little thing we have up for you here is over at ogizmo.com. It's the Dose Alert Pill Reminder. Now, I'm not really sure if this is... Apparently, it says it's real. It says it's only $8.98. It's a sticky that goes on top of your standard-sized prescription pills. I'm not sure if it works with child safety locks or not. But what do you think of this thing?
No. It just looks like a stupid gadget.
What it appears to be is a 24-hour timer that you put on top of the pills to remind you whenever it's time to take your pills. I think the issue with this is I don't personally have problems knowing when I'm supposed to take daily medication. If this had, like, multiple times you could set in there, like every time you had to take, like, an antibiotic or something like that, it would go off 3 times a day. It would probably be a little bit better for me.
Yeah, and in addition, I take 4 prescription medicines. I could just see 4 beepers going off. Which one do you take?
Between you and Mom, the whole place would sound like an electronic symphony, so...
Yeah, it's no, never mind. Silly.
All right. Moving right along. If you happen to want it, it's only $8.98. But then again, you know, make sure you only have it for that one really important pill. You know, the crazy one that keeps you listening to the show. All right. Next little.
That was coffee.
Well, that too. All right. The next little thing that we have up for you here is the Cyclops Baby Ride. This is a little, what appears to be like a little scooter for a kid or something like that. That is completely. Foam meshed out into looking exactly like a giant, grotesque, beheaded Cyclops.
Yeah, and the child gets to sit in the brain.
So,
isn't that lovely?
It's actually really cool. There's a little girl sitting in it. She looks pretty happy. The brain's all lovely and purple, has lovely little pink accents, and the only real masculine colors on the entire thing are the green in the eye. So,
Yeah, and the pasty-looking flesh.
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily manly. That might be more of an earth tone, and I think earth tones are coming back. So for the well-heeled baby in your life, I'm pretty sure we might be able to hook you up with a Cyclops stroller. It also kind of goes to show you that kids are only afraid of what you tell them they're supposed to be afraid of. Because this little girl looks happier than anything just sitting there in the middle of this thing's brain.
Yep.
All right, we're moving right along here. Next little thing from... underprotective parents putting their children in the heads of Cyclops is to overprotective parents who want to clothe their children entirely in safety. There's a new gadget out there. I don't even know if it's a gadget. It's more of a textile revolution. But it's called Baby Glow. The idea behind this and the very strange bald hair that's actually on the guy who invented it has his head shaved bald the same as the kid in the action shot. It's actually kind of freaky, so we're going to scroll down past that. But the idea behind this is that the temperature, if the temperature goes over 37 degrees Celsius or, you know, 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit, then the color of the actual garment would change. Now, I don't know about anybody else out there, but most people heat up when they sleep. So if your kid's swaddled in all kinds of you know, toasty, first of all, you're going to want to wake them up to check the color of their thing, or should you be a little bit more cognizant of how sick they are?
I don't know. This looks kind of dumb. Some people run with a warmer body temperature than others.
Yeah,
so I do, and So does my son.
Actually, I'm lower.
You're lower.
Yeah, my body temperature is 97.1, so I could have a fever and this thing wouldn't even know, you know, if I was baby-sized and they had them, but I was at one point, so.
Okay.
But, yeah, you know, when I go to sleep, I kind of cook a little bit, and that's that really wouldn't work here. All right, next little thing we have up for you here, going from unsafe mentally to very safe just all around to just crazy insane, we have a bladed baby furniture sale. This is Klingon-style blades made for kids with fierce rocking. So it's a rocker that is made with two bat lifts for the actual front and the back end of the axis where it's supposed to rock on. For those of you not in the know, a bat lift is a Klingon weapon from Star Trek where it actually looks like the front blade of an axe with all kinds of interesting little tribal designs, except it's wide enough to where you would put it between two hands. So it's roughly shoulder width apart and has one long curving blade right in the middle behind or in front of the hand grabs. So you can see where that would kind of turn into a little rocking shape there.
I don't know. It's a nifty little ornament, but you wouldn't actually put a baby in it.
Yeah, it also has...
They fall out of the crib, they behead themselves. I mean, let's get real. That's not smart.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think the instructions would have to come in Klingon at this point. The only good thing about it was there's plenty of tiny little throwing knives actually lacing the bottom. So if you actually trained your child to protect you and put them in the front of the room and then somebody entered, they could probably pick them off as they walked in. So other than that, we have an interesting little bit more practical, but a pretty sure that this thing's never going to enter my house. How about yours?
No, never entering.
But it looks pretty cool, doesn't it?
This looks interesting, but no, not entering the house.
There's a interesting little piece of medieval furniture. It's a magazine rack that uses wire mesh that actually goes in between two shields with crossed spears in them, shortened cross spears. So the spears actually act as legs. The shields actually bookend the cavity where the magazines sit. It looks really kind of cool. I probably wouldn't necessarily put the points sticking upwards.
Well, you'd have to.
Why?
Well, try moving it across the floor with the points sticking down.
It doesn't look like it would be heavy enough to actually... you don't want to drag it, obviously.
For sure.
But, I mean, this way, you know, your cat...
You don't want to fall into it. That's one thing for sure.
Yeah, your cat misses a jump, all of a sudden you have a kitty kebab. And the cat behind me kind of eyeballing me at this point.
Cat left.
Oh, she did? Oh, well. All right, moving right along from medieval furniture to a man den alert. Everybody has, a lot of people that I know have the stereotypical sofa bed that ends up in the man den. This here being the caffeination layer, we don't have one. We have a ratty old floral sofa just to throw people off the scent. But I know we had a sleeper sofa in the basement, and I can only ever remember maybe two times that it was ever used.
It was used more than that.
Okay.
Yes.
But the idea behind this is that this is actually a two-in-one sofa and billiard table, so that the thing actually folds up and is a full-size pool table from the inside.
That's nice.
Do you think this thing would get a little bit more use than the sofa bed?
Oh, yes.
I have a feeling this thing would probably end up staying more of a billiard table than a sofa.
Yeah, it'd be open more than closed.
But I like the utility, because I think that's the one of the big problems with a pool table. You have to kind of dedicate one space to it and hope that...
Usually an entire room.
Yeah, and hope that it just doesn't get covered with laundry. I actually know a couple people who have pool tables. And
that's horrible.
Yeah, the one guy actually saved a little bit of money and bought a plywood pool table as opposed to the slate-topped pool table. And his wife was laying wet clothes across it to dry, and it kind of started to warp. So the ball started, like, jumping off the table and ended up ruining the whole thing. They needed to have a little bit more communication there.
Yeah, I'd say so. I used to work for a guy that had a pool table. He had an entire room dedicated to it. And that's all that was in the room is the pool table, the rack on the wall, and a couple of tall chairs against the wall. Beautiful.
Yeah, where we live, it's not really a space-conscious kind of environment where you could kind of just dedicate one of the rooms.
No.
So, all right, moving right along to something that's nifty and interesting, like the pool table, kind of begs the question of what exactly could I do to give to my father for a Father's Day present that would probably end up strangling someone. Well, the idea would be a hammock chair. This, I'm having trouble kind of describe what this is, but imagine like a trapeze sling hanging from the ceiling where there's one bar going across, then there's a weird little chair that hangs from it.
This, I Something comes to mind that I can't talk about here. This is bizarre.
Yeah, I kind of understand what you're saying. The weird thing about this is that when you're actually looking at it, like all these bars and different things that hang all over the place doesn't really look like... It looks like it would be really comfortable once you get into it, but if, you know...
Getting into it, you could hurt yourself.
Yeah,
or someone else near you.
Yeah. It needs to have a cooler attached to it so that you don't have to go anywhere else for the beer, that the beer's just kind of there. Or maybe they could hang some kind of little pulley system. You give one yank and one comes sliding over.
Yeah. Yeah, that's no good.
All right,
won't hold even one beer.
Well, no, there was a little pouch for a water bottle, but I mean
that's way up out of the reach.
Yeah, you'd probably end up tipping the thing over at the same point in time. All right, moving right along, we have an interesting little version of Mario. My father has one of the most interesting ways to play Mario Brothers that I've ever seen. Would you care to regale the people?
Yes, instead of pressing the buttons, I move the controller and shake it in the direction I want to go, which is the way the new controllers and things like that work these days, but that's what I did with the originals, which is why I was always so horrible at the games.
And he also almost got himself whiplash trying to play the driving games, too, but...
Yeah, but...
So the idea behind this is that it's actually a theremin-controlled Mario game. So somebody hacked together a theremin. Now, if you've never seen one of these, imagine a flat rectangular box in front of you with an antenna on the one side sticking straight up and then an antenna sticking out the other side horizontally. So there's an X and a Y axis. Depending on where you put your hands in the field between the two antennas, it's supposed to play a note. Now, it's kind of a weird kind of eerie, echoey kind of sound. But the person who did this, instead of having it play a note, had the frequencies that it returned modified into changing how the controllers moved for the classic game of Mario Brothers. So if you moved your right hand left or right, it would actually move the character on the screen left or right.
I might actually be able to play this game.
And if you moved your left hand up and down, it would actually make the thing jump. The only problem was if you wanted to shoot the fireball, you had to jump at the same time, which isn't always the most strategically sound initiative.
But it's a work in progress.
Yeah.
I can see this getting better.
So I mean, with all the different advances in motion gaming that are coming out, maybe this will be the next thing, because you could unplug it and always use it as an instrument after the fact. All right, moving right along to something I needed a little bit of help to try and explain here. There's a student who built a bolt-action portable coil gun in woodshop. Now, for those of you who aren't in the know, a coil gun or rail gun is a way to magnetically accelerate a projectile without using combustion. So basically, you put the metal projectile in there, you run the current through it, and it fires it out the front. They can get really, really quick, and it's almost silent to use compared to a gun. The only problem is they had a multimeter strapped in there, and it wasn't really sure exactly how they go. So, Dad, could you give me a little bit of a...
Not exactly sure on the technology, but it appears they're using capacitance, where they charge a capacitor to a certain point and then fire the capacitor off to launch their projectile of whatever type.
Yeah, I'm not really sure if they're just tiny little like neodymium magnets, which are like the metalized magnets, like the metal covered magnets, or what, or if it's just like a metal slug. But what were you saying about the capacitor tests they used to run in schools?
Ah, in school we used to, in electric shop, they would periodically, someone would get a capacitor and stick it carefully through the seat of a chair and tape it up there so that the next unlucky person that would sit in the chair would discharge the capacitor through their posterior end and jump.
How big were the capacitors, roughly?
Do not know.
Okay.
Don't remember.
Yeah, you didn't often?
No.
Did you ever get caught?
No.
Okay.
And in addition, my grandfather had an electric chair working this much the same way. He would plug it in the wall and put it in the dining room, and when they'd have company come over, it's, oh, we need the extra chair. The extra chair and the unsuspecting guest would sit and rise to the occasion.
Is this the same gentleman who used to send fake radio broadcasts for people to go home?
No, not when he wanted them to go home. It's when my mother was having a party, he would announce that the high school was on fire. So everyone would cheer. And then he would say that since the school was burning, that they would end up having to go to a rival school for the remainder of the year, at which point everyone would get upset. He's also the same grandfather who flew an airplane up until 1910, and his wife had her next child and told him, you're going to quit flying now.
Wasn't that child my grandmother?
I believe so.
Okay. The story about the radio, actually, my father has the radio sitting in his basement. To the best of our knowledge, it still works, right?
Yes. It's an Atwater Kent.
So it's from 1921, we found out, or 1914? One of those two?
I don't remember the date on it.
Okay.
But it's an Atwater Kent Model 36.
And it actually had the headphones still work, which, I mean, if you ever have headphones that lay around now, I mean, they have pretty much a 3-year life expectancy, and these things are over 80 years old. The radio also came equipped with a lovely wood-coned speaker that I actually think was lacquered basswood.
Yes, about 10 inches in diameter. Just needs a minor bit of repair to reconnect the wiring to the cone.
The entire unit is really gorgeous. Now, if we sound slightly different than we did at the beginning of the podcast, that's because the program that we're using to record the podcast, Audacity, decided to crap out halfway through. The only good thing about that is that we needed a refill, right?
Yep.
So we went upstairs. We got the next thing that we're supposed to be taste testing, and we're going to talk about at the end of the show. Luckily, we have a little bit more of this one in stock, so if we have to, we can go back upstairs for it.
Okay, as long as we have more.
Yeah, you got to make sure you have stock on hand. The other thing was kind of just the appetizer, so... All right, we're going to keep on going here.
We'll keep you in suspense on what we're taste testing, too.
Yeah. All right, the last little thing that we have for you here in Geek Cruft section of the Caffeination Podcast is actually a tactical-grade flashlight. They're calling this a light for life. This thing charges in only 90 seconds. It has a whole bunch of really impressive statistics to go around it. For instance, that it has an interesting charging pad. If you plug it into house current, charges in 90 seconds, has a regular 90 lumens strong, which is an incredibly bright beam for a standard thing.
Yeah, that's quite a bright flashlight.
The second thing that it has is actually, I guess, like an emergency torch, which is 270 lumens, which is enough to pretty much blind you for a good period of time. And it also it can go on full charge, 270 lumens for 45 minutes straight. And the third thing it actually has is a strobe mode to actually flash on and off. I guess it's like the ultimate emergency flashlight. I'm perfectly happy with my pretty much indestructible mag light. It sits in the bottom of my car, and I think I changed batteries once like 3 years ago, and I haven't changed them since.
Yeah, I'm all for cheap flashlights, too. Batteries usually rot and go bad and take the flashlight out before...
My buddy Jimmy is actually trying to convince me to get LED lights for, like, an LED bulb for my mag light, because he says not only will it make the flashlight brighter, but it'll also make the batteries last longer. But then again, I've had the same pair of batteries for 3 years. I think I'm going all right.
Yeah.
So if you want one of these, rather than the $15, you can spend $170 for this flashlight. I'm not really sure that I'd be looking to spend $170. How about you?
I don't think I'd spend that much. After all, I use cheap throwaway flashlights.
I think the best flashlight that we have is actually a flashlight my wife got at work. It's a flashlight that has no batteries and has two incredibly bright LEDs at the front. What you do is you actually shake it, and there's a tiny little generator that actually goes back and forth in the middle. It's actually a magnet that goes through a coil, and it you know, a couple good vigorous shakes are enough to give you like 15-20 minutes of light. So it sits in the basement because it's the perfect thing to have for the fuse box should it go out.
Yeah, LED lighting is the way of the future, I think.
Yeah, these the fun little curly Q lights that are everywhere right now, the CFLs are going out because they have so much toxic chemicals in them. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens after this.
Yeah, but they're better than the carbon filament bulbs.
Actually, they on one of the other shows that I did recently, they found a way to make the carbon filament bulbs just as efficient as CFLs by treating the filament with a laser. So they actually shoot a laser. It's like a piezoelectric laser or something like that. It actually shoots molecular small holes in an array all over it and actually makes it much more... since there's no carbon there, there's much less resistance. So they said you could burn a 150-watt bulb and only use the same amount of wattage as a 30-watt bulb.
Interesting.
Regular incandescent. And they're saying if they can install the systems, they could save the incandescent industry.
Okay.
And it would actually change the color of the light, so it would actually be the nice bright white light you get out of the CFLs as opposed to the yellowy light. All right, but that's enough about flashlights. I mean, seriously. All right, we're moving on to next to the food and caffeinated bits section here at the Caffeination Podcast. Just in case you're joining us late, this show is located lovingly nestled over at www.caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com. And any comments, feedback, suggestion, or hate mail that you have, please feel free to fire it off to caffeination@gmail.com. All right, what would Father's Day podcasts be without a little bit of grill work? So we're going to talk a little bit about some grills. We're going to talk about some grill tools, both old and new, and then we're going to move into some other interesting stuff towards the end. First little thing we have up for you here is actually a steampunk grill, although I'm not really sure why you would consider this thing a steampunk grill. It's more of like a recycled grill. Steampunk's kind of like the Jules Verne aesthetic, Dad. It's like, you know, wood and copper and like a lot of different piping and stuff, like brass.
Okay.
How would you describe this thing?
It's a recycled gas tank that has a chimney on top. looks like a lot of your commercial smokers, really, if you think about it.
Yeah, I don't know why it's so interesting. I just kept looking at this. This is actually a Flickr photo set that you can head on over there and check out. The gentleman actually made a spit that goes through the middle of it. That seems to be pretty useful to actually, you know, roast the pig or something like that. But it's a giant recycled submerged gas tank.
Yeah, and you could roast an entire pig on this from the size of it.
Yeah, we don't know how tall the guy is, but, you know, scale-wise, it looks pretty beefy, let's just say.
It appears to be almost 5 foot long.
So maybe a small pig.
Mm-hmm.
All right, moving right along to a little bit more of a containable grill, but no less snooty. I don't know how many people out there are big fans of the Weber grill name. I like grills. I have a grill in my backyard. I actually have two grills in my backyard, you know, but one's a nice tiny little small grill you can take with you camping. The other one's the standardized gas grill. And I know the people arguing between charcoal and gas on which makes better cooking, but I've never actually heard of better burgers just coming off of something because of the name. How about you, Dad?
No. And I've seen Weber grills. I've eaten food off of Weber grills and food off of other charcoal grills. Yeah, there's no taste difference.
Yeah, I actually know one gentleman who has a Weber grill, and he actually goes out to the stores and buys the replacement parts to get the thing all souped up and ready to go. This particularly little tiny grill, which runs off of, I guess it's propane. I'm not really sure what that tiny little screw-on thing there. It looks like a, you know, a double mini propane cylinder. It doesn't even look like a full-on propane thing. And it has a automatic burner for the charcoal briquette. So you put the charcoal briquettes in kind of like a tiny little starter at the bottom. I've seen these on camping trips with the Boy Scouts. We've seen tiny little coffee cans that are used where you put the briquettes in there and you poke holes in the bottom and you light the bottom and you put it over the fire as a way of starting the grills.
Yeah.
But I've never seen it where it's like a force-injected propane flame that actually goes in there. This grill, which looks exactly like every other small-size Weber grill, except it has a tiny little plate off to the side. For that plate off to the side, you pay, I guess, an extra $150 over what it would normally be.
Yeah, it's fancy.
The thing retails for just under $330. That's tax not included, in case anybody out there is really interested in doing it. All right.
Enjoy.
Yeah. All right. Moving right along. My father used to be on the fencing team in high school and instilled a great love of swords. And we've talked about this a little bit before, but I kind of wanted to get a little bit of his opinion on the BBQ sword. This is a series of cooking products that actually exist as what they say is fencing foils. But
however, what they've got pictured is a saber. It has a full hand guard around it, whereas a foil just has a little cup around the handle. So this is a saber.
So it's a BBQ saber as opposed to a BBQ foil. The idea behind it is that it's a little hand guard. Yeah, but personally, I don't think grill season started until you burned at least half the hair off the back of one of your cooking hands. So
I don't get burnt.
I don't ever get burned, but I singe all the hair off the back of my hand trying to turn the burgers in the back of the grill.
You shouldn't. You have your nifty tools, which we're going to talk about next.
Yeah, I know. But when you're scraping the grill halfway through.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The only bad thing about this is that it actually comes with a free Zorro mask. I'm not sure exactly what this thing does to the fire that you're cooking on, but you should never really need a mask to obscure your vision as you're cooking. You kind of need to be able to have your wits about
Maybe
you.
Maybe you're supposed to use the mask to start the fire?
Maybe you're supposed to use the mask so that no one sees you using it.
Ah.
All right, so Zorro be gone. A while ago, my father actually brought me grill utensils by Craftsman. Now, I didn't see these when he originally bought them because apparently they were a limited run. But yes. When we got our house 3 years ago, this was one of the presents he gave me as a housewarming present. It's a 5-piece grill set. Has a tiny little scraper, the brush, the tongs, the fork, and the giant, massive spatula.
And they all have the Craftsman handle.
So if you ever
typical Craftsman handle.
So if you've ever seen the Craftsman screwdriver, it has the iconic red, white, and blue handle of that. And I got to tell you, they're some of the easiest to use grill utensils that I've ever seen. Apparently, Sears still has the reviews, and out of the people that reviews them, it's just about a 5. It's a 4.86, which is pretty good when you're just talking about grill utensils.
And they work well too.
Yeah, I've never had any problems with these except for the fact that they all come with little leather straps that are on the back of them to hang them, and they come untied if you put the straps in the dishwasher.
You're not supposed to.
Yeah, I know. I did once or twice, and they came out. So other than that, they are incredibly good grill tools, so I just wanted to pass it along. All right, up next, one of the most popular topics that's out there in nutrition right now is talking about hidden salt. Now, I wasn't really sure about what they were talking about with this, so I decided that maybe it could be something like this. These are Ninja spice dispensers. They're salt and pepper shakers, one white and one black. They're interesting, they're cute, but for $17, what do you think for a salt shaker?
No, thank you.
All right. The link's in the show notes if you want to find that. Next little thing that we have up for you here is actually a do-it-yourself potato chip maker that allows you to make potato chips in the microwave. A little bit safer and a little bit more nutritious than actually doing it in deep fried, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, most likely. It's a lot healthier.
I don't know exactly how you're supposed to do it. They say you're supposed to slice it really thin, then you put it up around the ring, kind of like a little shrimp ring, I guess. I guess that's the closest thing that it looks like.
Yeah, or if you had a slide projector, one of those slide projector reels from years ago.
Yeah, I think we actually are just getting rid of a couple of them this week, believe it or not. We have one professor who has 50,000 slides in his personal library, and he's slowly scanning them in. But they've stopped making the slide projectors themselves.
Wow.
So he's kind of behind the gun here. All right, so this thing's kind of interesting. The price on this thing is relatively inexpensive. It's kind of coming in at just about $14. It also comes in with a tiny little thing that you can actually slice them and size them out, so that's nice. It's not too expensive, so I could see this kind of thing making a way. Up next, we have an interesting little story from over at Yanko Design. Now, these are all products that don't really exist. The idea behind this is that it shows different ways of getting rid of trash. The story itself is kind of interesting. Was there any on here that you actually thought were pretty cool?
No. Not really.
Yeah,
most of them are very impractical.
The only one that I actually thought was kind of interesting was they had an Armstrong bin that it was basically an accordion-style trash can that once you threw the trash in and it started getting full, you'd use your foot, put it in the imprint, and stomp it down to compact it. However, we seem to find one small problem with this.
Yeah, when you have an accordion-style piece of plastic, you can only open, collapse, and expand it so many times before it cracks.
So there
and
you go.
What do you do for a bag?
I haven't figured that out, and I'm wondering exactly what would happen if the trash got stuck in the accordion area.
Yeah.
It kind of get a little smelly.
That's why they don't make them yet.
All right, moving right along. You can head out and check all the other ones. We're trying to get to the good part of the show here. I've seen a lot of people talking about coffee recommendations for Father's Day. The most prevalent recommendation, this is from two coffee lovers that are sitting here talking to you right now. For some reason, people keep recommending Kopi Luwak coffee as a gift for the discerning coffee lover. Now, it's made popular by the film The Bucket List. The only problem was I knew about the coffee beforehand. Kopi Luwak coffee is excrement coffee. It's made from a palm civet, which is a giant cat that lives in the trees, eats coffee cherries, and then you get the seed after the fact. So what do you say?
Cat crap coffee, no thank you.
And I'm going to say the same thing. For $35 for a 2-ounce package.
Yeah, I can buy a lot of coffee for that $35. And more than 2 ounces for sure.
And since you're my father, I've already talked to Jenny, we're not getting you this for Father's Day.
Thank you very much.
And I've already talked to Jen, and I'm not getting it either, so I think we're good.
Yes.
Hopefully we're going to put the idea out there so that nobody else gets this in the future. All right, next little thing we have up for you here. This is kind of a little one-off thing. Both my father and I are more on the frugal side than the let's spend gads of money just to have people look at things side of things. There's been a recommendation that's been floated in a couple different bridal magazines. Now, I know my wife wouldn't have done this because she's not a coffee drinker by any stretch of the imagination, but they're actually putting the suggestion out there of having a dedicated coffee bar at a wedding. And
I've had coffee at every wedding I've ever been to. And you have it after the drinks, after the meal, and you're not going to taste fancy coffee at that point anyway, so what's the use?
I don't think you should be putting bad coffee out there, but you don't need to pay a service specifically just to serve coffee at your wedding. So
you don't need fancy coffee.
So save yourself some cash and buy better alcohol during the actual ceremony itself.
Yep.
Top shelf all the way.
Yes.
All right, and the last little
single
thing.
Single malt.
Talking to two Scotch guys right here. Glenn Levitt for me.
Yep.
All right, and the last little thing that we got going for you here is actually a simple guide to coffee illustrations for the home barista. These are 9 little diagrams that you can print out and actually put up. They're from weeklyroast.com. Weekly Roast is actually one of the sponsors of the 3 and 3 podcast that we did this past year, and they actually donated a pound of coffee to the cause. So I'm more than happy to send you on over there to check this out. It's a lovely little thing you can kind of put up there, so that way if you have people over and you happen to have an espresso machine, they can say, hey, can I have a cafe latte? And you can say, okay, fine, there's a little bar for milk foam, a little bar for steamed milk, and a little bar for espresso, is once you get all those things in there, hey, you got a cafe latte. Where you can have a cappuccino, which is a lot more milk foam, a little bit of steamed milk, and then a little bit of espresso at the bottom. So, or everybody's favorite who's going into Starbucks these days seems to be the Americano, which is a shot of espresso, and then you ruin it by putting water in it. So
I don't see cafe au lait.
Cafe au lait is one of the ones that's actually in the coffee calendar that I have from Mike Rohde. It's a wonderful little illustration, but the cafe au lait is steamed milk and just regular coffee. This is just espresso drinks. So
okay. All right.
All right. That about wraps it up for the food and caffeinated bits section here at the Caffeination Podcast. We're going into overtime here just because we have one more section that we're going to be trying out just for Father's Day. So I would like to introduce, this is going to be the Tasting Rundown. And welcome to the Tasting Rundown here at the Caffeination Podcast. My name is Paul, and this is
Scott.
And we're going to be talking about two different little coffee alcoholic beverages for you here today. The first is going to be the Flying Fish Imperial Espresso Porter from the Flying Fish Brewery. It was actually their 10th anniversary brew. It's a light porter, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's quite good, tasty. You can really taste the espresso in it, and it's really satisfying.
It has a nice smooth finish. There's a little bit of a hint of a toffee note, and the one thing that I was actually kind of pleased about that was there was no hint of mocha. I don't really like how people kind of throw chocolate in with coffee all the time.
No. Chocolate has its place, not always with coffee.
I have actually had some chocolate beer, and it's not bad, but it's not good either, so I'm just going to leave it at that. Maybe we'll do that for a different time.
Yeah, I've tried chocolate and vodka, too, and that's...
That's all right.
That's okay.
Now we're going to get on to the star of the show, the Pinnacle Le Doble Espresso vodka that we are both sampling right now, which is actually a wonderful, smooth version of a espresso vodka. It's not a coffee vodka because it has much more body to the coffee taste. You can actually taste it just on the back end. It's a much smoother intro than some of the other ones that are out there.
Yeah, it's nice. It's more of a coffee than... The espresso beer, you tasted the espresso. This, you taste coffee more than espresso. And it's got a nice finish.
The good thing about the espresso vodka is that both my father actually helped me test the three olives. The only problem with the three olives that we both found...
You can't find it.
We have people scouring the Philadelphia area looking for this because I sampled the bottle out to a lovely group of coffee lovers that are all rabidly expecting this thing. The best thing that we found to replace it in the Three Olives stable is the...
Root beer.
The root beer is nice, especially if you mix it with cream soda. We found out it's a really, really good drink.
I just like it on ice.
I know you do, but you like most on ice.
Yeah.
So the final verdict here is, what would you give from 1 to 5 for the Imperial Espresso Porter? You can use, points in the middle if you feel like.
3.75.
Okay, I'm more inclined to give it a 3.9 to a 4.1. I really like it. The only thing is it doesn't quite measure up to the body that actually exists in some of the cream stouts, and I think a cream stout actually holds up better to the coffee because it really tastes like you're actually drinking like a really big, thick coffee milkshake at that point. They're dangerous.
Yeah, and it doesn't have any hops flavor in it.
Yeah, it's not a real bitter, it's not a real hoppy kind of an ale, so.
It's more of an espresso with beer flavor.
It's not bad, but we kind of glossed over the other one that I tried a little bit ago. I kind of did a little bit of pre-testing. The Fuel Cafe wasn't quite up to snuff, so I didn't feel like bringing it out for a Father's Day show.
Okay.
But we're both pretty good on the espresso vodka. What would you give that on a 5 scale?
475.
I'm inclined to agree with you on that one. All right, thank you very much. This has been the Tasting Rundown here at the Caffeination
okay,
Podcast.
Okay, we got one more section that he's not aware of. Being Father's Day, my son is a father as well. So Father's Day goes along with gifts. So I have a gift for my son that he has no clue about. Being a Lord of the Rings devotee, I gave him a keychain with the Eye of Sauron.
Thank you.
Glass.
Thank you very much. That's awesome. My father does stained glass work, and he's recently been working a lot more with melting the glass in the kiln. So it's a lovely little key fob with a red piece of glass in the middle with a tiny piece of black sliver cut exactly like an eye of a reptile or the Eye of Sauron from the movies. So thank you very much, Dad. That's really awesome.
You're welcome.
All right, and that about wraps up here. We are going into overtime, like I said, usually 35 minutes, but you know what? It's a special day, so I'm happy to go over. Thank you so much for being with me on today's episode, Dad.
It was a pleasure. I'll be here anytime you have alcohol.
Happy Father's Day.
Thank you. Same to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and stay caffeinated, people.